There's a better place to get your podcast. GCNlive.com. Hundreds of thousands of hours. Archived for your listening pleasure. All free at GCNlive.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Briefly talking about Chris O'Brien's San Luis Valley Camera Project. Right. So right now, the intention is to stream the video. But do you expect some...
You want to record it, I would think.
Well, obviously, the software is record on motion, detect on motion, then record on motion.
Cool.
All three cameras are going to high def and record. Right. And we're going to have a slaved unit that's going to have a unit with a diffraction grating on it so that we can divide the light into spectra if it's at night. And for $60,000, we can put the system together. For another $60,000, we can have it completely FLIR.
Well, and now that I remember, when you and I first met Chris, which was back in 2006 for that television...
Right, 2000. I was earlier than that. I think 2005, yeah.
Well, we shot that in 06, but okay. We talked about night vision. I think there was a night vision binoculars that you had.
Right.
That you let me use.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you're obviously really into some, really good optics and data capture back then as well.
Well, yeah, it's having a good team of scientists, consultants, too. You know, we've got some pretty high-powered people. Ron McGarris helping out. Marcia Adams, who did some work with Paul Devereaux and also up at Haslin. And others, too. So we know exactly what we want to do, especially recording gravitometer and recording magnetometer. I think that's very, very important. Also acoustic. We wanted to do build a 3-foot by 3-foot solid concrete pad and stick some sophisticated PZM mics on there to see if we can
Wow.
get VLF and ULF frequencies.
Like a modern version of Project Magnet, as Wilbert Smith did.
Yeah. There's a lot of ultrasound, ultra-low sound frequencies going around, I think, in a lot of these events. And also, having a map that has a little blinking light so the locals who are tuned in can run out with their camcorders and they know which direction to look.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
I love this project.
I'm going to do a Kickstarter campaign. Hopefully you'll help me get the word out later on this summer. We're about ready to go. The base station is being installed as we speak. So.
I think we're moving into an era where there's a number of other people who are trying to do what you're trying to do and maybe different variations on themes.
Well, Doug Strumpel and Mark D'Antonio are involved in a project that's even more sophisticated. I think that's a real positive development. I'm helping you answer that question.
Yes, I think absolutely it is.
Okay, here's one before we get going too far. What solid, indisputable evidence regarding UAPs have been collected over the past 5 years? A similar question. This one comes from Bluto 392.
I don't know how I'm going to answer that because, honestly, I'm not – until I start to write my third volume of – until I get to that point in volume three of UFOs and National Security State, I don't really know how I'm going to want to answer that. Like what I feel is the best, most solid – evidence in the last 5 years, I'll probably have a much better, at least provisional answer for that in another year or two, but I don't want to answer that right now.
That also gets us to volume three of UFOs in National Security State. What time period does that cover, 2000 to 2010 or something? Or?
No, it'll cover 1992 to the present day.
To the present day. How's that project going? I know you've been working on it for a while.
I'm writing a different book right now. So yeah. This will be the third book that's getting in the way of my third volume of history. So I don't know if I'm annoying everyone to no end here. I was going to do, first I did AD After Disclosure, which some people said, oh my God, why are you doing that book? Just do volume three. But I'm glad I did AD After Disclosure.
Well, and I'm glad you did 21st Century Mind. I've been recommending it all
you.
Over the place.
I love it.
I think it's a really well-written book. It's one of my favorite reference books right now. I hate to sound to our listeners like I'm blowing smoke up your tailpipe here, but I'm serious. I really thank you so much for sending it to me. I still need to get a signed copy from you.
Gladly. No, I appreciate that, Chris. I loved writing that book, and I wanted a single volume that I always thought of it as a sophisticated introduction, an up-to-date overview of the field where it was as of the writing, and I think it was needed. So I'm glad I wrote it. The book that I'm writing right now is not even a UFO book. It's my first fully non-UFO book, and it's a history, an analytical history of false flag operations.
Cool.
I want to hear this.
I'm deep into this book now, and it's I've been working on it quietly since last winter. As a result of that, it's not that I'm out of the UFO mindset. I mean, I've been really throwing myself into.
I would say that there's a lot of relevance there.
No, I think so. I think it's a book that needs to be written. There is no history of false flags, and I could talk to you for hours about this actually right now. Yeah, that's what I'm actually deep, and I've only recently been talking about this. So for the first half of this year, I wasn't telling anyone that this was my book, except that I was working on a book.
Now, I want to ask you quickly here. There are lots of conspiracy theories about possible false flag incidents. Is there one you could bring to mind that you've been covering that might have some traction, some validity?
Yes, absolutely. So the first of all, the problem with researching a false flag as opposed to UFOs is that UFOs actually are easier to research, in my opinion, because with UFO phenomenon, you have one thing that you can always fall back on, which are verified reports and indeed declassified military documents. If all else fails, I can always refer to the fact that there are several thousands of pages of documents from the FBI and the CIA and all the military branches, many of which will discuss, you know, encounters that military personnel have had with UFOs, and clearly you can read from them that they generated a very serious response in many cases. With a good false flag, by its very nature, it's a covert op that's done by professionals who know what they're doing, and it is not necessarily the case that you're really going to be able to prove it to your satisfaction. It's more than 80 years since the Reichstag fire occurred in 1933, and the fact is that among academic historians to this day, there is dispute over whether or not the Nazis did it or the Dutch communist van der Lubbe did it by himself, as was claimed, and that the Nazis simply were opportunists as a result of it. Now, I do believe that the Reichstag fire was a false flag, and I think most historians probably agree, but the fact is that one signal event, which happened a full lifetime ago, there's still not 100% certainty. And that's what a good false flag will do. It will leave that seed of doubt. Now, there are false flags that are absolutely confirmed. There's no shadow of a doubt. If there were an Olympics of false flags, as I've been saying lately, I would say the United States gets the gold. And I would say two key U.S. strategic allies get the silver and bronze, and that would be Israel and Britain, as opposed to, say, the Russians, who have far fewer false flags, as a matter of fact. A confirmed false flag that we know is Operation Gladio. And anyone can look this up. This is actually a fascinating story. This took place during the Cold War. This is done by NATO operatives. And Gladio initially started as basically kind of a leave-behind operation in the event that the Soviets were to take over Western Europe, which was a fear in the late 1940s. And so what happened, particularly in Italy, is there were teams that would be left behind that would act as kind of like the resistance in the event of a Soviet takeover. Well, the Soviets never took over Italy. And so you've got these teams there and wondering what they would do. Well, what they ended up doing, and this was with CIA knowledge, according to the witnesses involved, they started causing mayhem and blowing up train stations and killing people. You're talking hundreds of people getting killed and blaming it on the Red Brigade and blaming it on the communists, as specifically as a way of influencing Italian politics and bringing people to the right of center of politics. Now, that's been confirmed.
That's pretty well known.
Absolutely. And, you know, the Gladio operation has a great deal in common with a number of operations that were, like, for example, pretty darn sure that Mossad was doing in France and in Paris during the 70s and 80s, similar operations.
They've made movies about it.
Yeah, and blowing up locations, including delicatessens, Jewish delicatessens. In fact, one case in Paris in late 70s, I believe, blaming it on...
There's leaked documents like the Northwoods, potential
Northwoods. Northwoods is the 1962, and this was from the Joint Chiefs. And this was a false flag that didn't happen, but no, exactly. And it really, when you read the information on Northwoods, it reads just like a 9/11 fundamentally. And what what our military intelligence wanted to do was take Castro out of Cuba. They had a plan that landed on Kennedy's desk, which was to fake a Cuban terrorist attack on U.S. property.
We have Richard Dolan. We're segueing into false flags, and I have one to ask him about shortly. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and floating phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO@WebTV.net. That's MrUFO@WebTV.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
Spend your life with this Dentovite.
Hey, neighbor, what are you doing digging? You had a heart attack last year.
Oh, I know. I was told no more hard labor.
Then why are you digging?
Well, I've been taking Extendivite. It's been approved to help my heart.
Extendivite? Is that a new drug?
No, not a drug. It's more like an herbal combination made from garlic and cayenne.
Herbal? How can that help?
Well, actually, we've taken herbs for thousands of years. Extendivite is doing the job for me.
Does your doctor know about Extendivite?
Yeah, my doctor knows, and he said it seems to be working for you, so don't stop taking it. I feel great taking Extendivite. I don't want to stop.
To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Honey, it's time for dinner. What are you doing over there on your computer?
I'm shopping for a new wallet. Mine is falling apart. Hey, did you know there's a company called ID Stronghold that makes shielded wallets to prevent electronic pickpocketing?
Oh, I didn't realize there was such a thing as electronic pickpocketing. What is that?
Well, apparently, many of the new credit and debit cards being issued have radio chips inside them called RFID that transmit our banking information to card readers when we pay. Unfortunately, a bad guy can also get one of these readers and go around the city scanning people, collecting their credit card numbers and personal information without us knowing it.
Wow, that sounds scary. Since you're getting a new wallet anyway, you should definitely get an ID Stronghold shielded wallet. Are they more expensive?
No. In fact, I can get a shielded leather wallet from IDStronghold.com for the same price or less than regular unshielded wallets from other stores.
Sounds great. My wallet isn't falling apart yet, but let me pick one out too. I want to be protected, and these wallets at IDStronghold.com look fantastic.
You pick up the receiver. With your heart racing and sweat dripping from your forehead, you finally muster the courage to dial the number to call into your favorite talk radio show. It rings once, twice, and then...
Hello, it's GCN. What's your name and the state you're calling from?
Surprised you got through, you squeak out...
Jason from Minnesota.
Please hold.
As you patiently wait for your turn, you begin to daydream about being a famous talk radio host and what it would be like to have your own show.
Jason from Minnesota, you're up.
Millions of loyal listeners worldwide waiting to call and talk to you. You.
Caller, are you there?
Cheering crowds surround you, calling out your name.
Going once, twice. Okay, we gotta move on to the next caller.
You blew it.
Huh? Wait, no!
Interact with the host you're listening to right now online at GCNlive.com. Click on the community link. Engage with other listeners. Ask questions. Start debates. Don't agree with the host? Let them know. Be a part of the community at GCNlive.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So back in the days of the Kennedy administration, you were telling us about a false flag operation to get rid of Castro in Cuba, right?
Richard well, yeah, Dillon? This is Northwoods, which didn't happen, but actually what to blame Castro. And Kennedy essentially said, no, this is not going to happen, and it didn't. On the other hand, this was right in line with what was then known as Operation Mongoose, which was, in fact, a series of dirty tricks, I guess you could say, that the U.S. intel community was doing against Cuba at that very time.
David Ferry.
Exactly. I mean, this is all tied in together. So it's a fascinating history. And, in fact, there was a claimed conversation that a gentleman had with Kennedy over a discussion of doing false flags in Dominican Republic around the same time, fake bombings, well, real bombings, but blamed on, you know, other operatives to justify U.S. invasions and so on. So this kind of thing, I think, was going on a lot at the level of discussion. What I think has happened is that we've really moved into an era of false flags. I think this is my opinion at this point. I would say 9/11 is probably the centerpiece of the false flag era. I think it, based on that, and not just 9/11, but the anthrax scare, which really we have to tie in with 9/11. You can't really talk about the one without the other. I think we tend to forget the significance of the anthrax scare.
And that they were handing out Cipro, a month before 9/11, and that's before exactly the anthrax attacks.
Exactly right. The key to understand about the anthrax scare is that, see, if 9/11 had happened by itself, we would have thought, oh, it was maybe a terrorist one-off, and, you know, they just did this one thing. But with anthrax coming through the mail and actually killing some people, right, you have the public now being whipped up by a media frenzy, of course, thinking, oh, my God, now first 9/11 crashing in buildings, now this, what's next? And, in fact, the letters that were being sent with the anthrax, the very first one, said exactly that. First 9/11, now this. Death to America, death to Israel, Allah is great. So it was a note that explicitly tied the anthrax to Islamic extremists. Yeah. All through that month of October, the Congress debated the USA Patriot Act. And the anthrax scare was front row center of the news, where the Bush administration was connecting the anthrax scare alternately, at one point to Saddam Hussein, at one point to Osama bin Laden, and at one point simply to vague Islamic terrorists. But these are the people being connected. So the USA Patriot Act passes October 24th, I think, 2001.
Yeah, and only Bernie Sanders didn't sign it.
Yeah, and I think Ron Paul.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and Ron Paul, right.
But here's the thing. The day after the USA Patriot Act was passed, with the anthrax scare being a key factor in the passage of that act, U.S. major news media comes out and says, oh, that anthrax apparently came from a U.S. biological weapons laboratory. And that's what happened. Now, that being the case, that is the conclusion. Who wrote the note? I'd like to know. I mean, and clearly, you've got a situation where this anthrax is being connected directly to 9/11, being used to pass the USA Patriot Act, which is the fundamental revolution in modern American politics, the quintessential revolution from above that has destroyed the last knife in the back of the old republic, let's just say. So I think we can really absolutely say that this is every bit a false flag, and it's intimately dependent upon 9/11.
That brings up some disturbing implications, I would say.
Most definitely. And, you know, the whole idea of the origin of this anthrax kind of went to sleep for a number of years after that. And the FBI tried to pin this anthrax on one scientist who was absolutely innocent. In fact, he was so innocent he was able successfully to sue the FBI for damages and won. And then they went after another scientist who, in the opinion of his colleagues, was absolutely equally innocent. But the FBI was looking for someone to pin this on. And this is what the FBI does. They look for scapegoats. That scientist committed suicide conveniently before they could go to trial. You know, when you start looking at all of the elements of the anthrax scare, I think that with 9/11, that's the key. And the problem, one of the things I'm looking at with this false flag phenomenon is simply the psychology that goes into it. Why false flags are necessary from the point of view of the American geopolitical elite and how they are so effective psychologically. And what I've come to understand is when you have these horrible traumatic events that occur in our society, whether it's 9/11 or any of these other shootings or the bombings that have occurred, and I don't know for a fact that all are false flags, but I'm suspicious of most of them, but they're traumatic. And so what you find out is that the media and the power structure immediately come in with an intellectual narrative to tie that emotion to. Right. You've got this deep sense of trauma, and then suddenly here's an answer. Those are the people who did this. And so I think what happens with us psychologically is that our emotions and our conceptual, our intellect kind of marry together with this answer. And this, I think, is why when you talk to people about 9/11 to this day, they get very emotional because they've been emotionally invested in this answer. And it's now been almost 15 years. And to revisit this, I think the longer we hold these opinions, the harder they are to dislodge.
In terms of false flags, Gulf of Tonkin for Vietnam, it justified our escalation of the Vietnam War. What's the story about that?
I consider that fundamentally, yes, a false flag. You can quibble. There's narrow definitions of false flags, and there's, I think, a slightly broader and maybe more realistic definition of what a false flag is. What we know about the Gulf of Tonkin, this was the fundamental justification, of course, for the expansion of the war in Vietnam. It happened in August 1964. The United States, the USS Maxwell, was in North Vietnamese waters at that time, and that is by itself an act of war, doing electronic espionage on North Vietnam. This is a huge U.S. battleship. Okay, no one's going to mug a U.S. battleship anywhere in the world. Maybe the Russians would challenge, but certainly not the North Vietnamese. So there apparently was one minor engagement. North Vietnamese had a very small ship, fired the equivalent of a pea shooter at USS Maxwell. No damage, nothing happened whatsoever. That encounter was transformed into two encounters. The second one is entirely fictitious, as far as we could tell. To an engagement, an unprovoked engagement on, as LBJ, President Johnson said, on the high seas, which means international waters, which was not the case. So this event was peddled to the American public, to the world public, as unprovoked aggression by the North Vietnamese. This is certainly not the case. And then was used, passed by Congress almost with unanimity, to giving essentially a blank check for massive escalation of the war in Vietnam. So, yes, I call that a false flag.
Okay. When's this book coming out?
I don't know when it's done. So sometime this year. I wanted it done by the middle of the summer. That's not going to happen. It will be done. What I've discovered is that it's you know, it's hard because going into each one of these cases, I have to be as meticulous and careful as I possibly can be. I want to do this right. And it's a topic that deserves careful treatment. I want to avoid going off on the deep end and saying everything's a false flag, but I also want to be brave enough to look at these cases on their own merits and say, you know, it's like a false flag or not. So that's the thing. And I think it'll be done by fall of this year.
We look forward to seeing it about false flags, Richard Dolan. Let's get on with our other subjects on the table. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
A little right, a little left, but always independent-minded. The Genesis Communications Network, GCN.
More and more people are discovering the incredible benefits of alkalizing the body, and there's no better product for it than AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops. Packed with a powerful combination of the most alkaline minerals and compounds, just a few drops in water will rid your body of harmful waste and give you more vibrance and vigor than you've had in years. Now buy two bottles and get $10 off your order. Call 800-518-7615 or visit alkavision.com. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health at alkavision.com.
Have you ever wondered if you could make electric, light, or heat in your home for free? How about a motor that charges batteries at the same time? What if this also restores useless batteries and saves you lots of money? Come to our Renaissance Charge Conference Workshop on August 15th and 16th in Fort Lauderdale. Visit r-charge.com. That's r-charge.com for details. Or call 208-304-2954. 208-304-2954.
Healthy elimination is essential to high energy, a cheerful mood, and prevention of disease. Some of the founders of our modern holistic health thinking state that disease begins in a toxic colon. A toxic intestinal tract is the foundation for virtually all degenerative disease, and a clean and well-moving intestinal tract is the foundation of health.
I just want to say that you folks have an amazing product. I've taken whey protein products for years, and I've never noticed results I have with your product. I've suffered with thoughts of constipation most of my life. Within a few days of taking One World Whey, I noticed a dramatic change. Also, in the past few years, I've experienced symptoms associated with diabetes. I feel horrible when I've had too much sugar, and I've been getting the foot pain as well. But I've noticed in the past week or so, I'm not feeling bad anymore, and the foot pain is gone. I'm just finishing up a 5-pound tub I ordered and just got off the phone ordering more. I love your product. Thank you.
Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325. Or visit OneWorldWhey.com. That's OneWorld, W-H-E-Y.com.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, John Huebner from Midas Resources. Are you tired of watching your hard-earned assets dwindle away? As government spending is out of hand and the Federal Reserve is creating in excess of $20 billion a week, are you tired of stockbrokers gambling away your hard-earned money? Is this market a setup for a crash greater than 1987? Too many of today's policies resemble those that led to the collapse of 1929.
This is John Huebner, and that was me in 2007. And we all know what happened when the subprime credit bubble burst. By March 2009, the dollar lost 50% of its value. The entire U.S. banking system was on the verge of collapsing. Like all financial problems of the past, is history about to repeat itself? Call me, John Huebner, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 129, before it's too late to protect yourself. Will the oncoming catastrophe take all private IRAs, 401ks with it? There is a way to protect your hard-earned assets. Call me, John Huebner, at 1-800-686-2237. 2237 extension 129.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
Now, as you notice in this episode, a lot of the questions are coming from you listeners of Virtue Dolan. And we've got one listener, as a matter of fact, we'll get to some of his questions shortly, where I think he asked about 20 questions or something like that. Yes, a whole bunch. He could have done a whole show.
Well,
just come on here and ask the questions.
Wow. Well, let's answer at least one or more, whatever.
Yeah, there are a number here. Let's talk about skeptics. You've been kind of taking a few kind of minor hits here and there recently. And I know what it's like, you know, being a publisher and trying to get the word out about your stuff. You may speak at conferences. I remember the one that you and I got lassoed into out there, that the first revamped UFOCon conference.
Which one do you mean there?
The one with Douglas Dietrich, and I had to pull you.
Oh, that was a funny one.
Hold you back.
I'm glad you were there.
You were really getting upset.
I wasn't half as upset as he was.
You were getting upset that he was getting so upset. And then when he started to justify why he was upset, then I mean, revisionist historians are a dime a dozen, and his particular theories are extremely.
I thought he was not credible. I was simply
bizarre.
Dietrich was actually saying that the U.S.
Yeah, Japan won the war. Okay, pal.
That was super peace. And I just thought there's not a single not one historian of the Second World War would say anything other than that's laughable.
Well, my point being is if I had known that Laura Eisenhower and Andrew Bastagio and some of these other characters who I really have little regard for personally in a professional manner in terms of the credibility of their work, you know, where do you draw the line about getting involved in a conference or speaking on a radio show? I remember we kind of spanked you a little bit about being on the third phase of Moon.
I didn't realize.
And the skeptics. I mean, Eric the Red wants to know.
I'm not really that sympathetic to those types of criticisms. I am sympathetic to criticisms of my work, and if someone has a legitimate beef about something that I do, I'm all ears and I want to hear it. Conferences, I don't. You know, like I got criticized a few times. I did two conferences with Project Camelot, Kerry Cassidy, Awake and Aware.
Right.
I remembered people criticizing me over that. And I just thought, you know, look, here's how I look at it. This is an opportunity for me to reach a new public. And that needs to hear, I feel, the things that I had to say, particularly a very new agey oriented public, which can be very problematic, obviously, in a lot of ways in this field. And I just felt like both of the times I did Awake and Aware, I was reaching a group of people that really didn't know much about my work previously, and I felt that I did make a difference. And in fact, both of those videos on YouTube got a tremendous number of views, so I was happy about it. When you do a conference, you must know this as well, Chris. I don't always know every single person who's going to be there or I may be asked to do a panel with. In the last couple of years, there have been a few instances in which I was asked to do a panel with individuals who I really do not support their work at all, or I don't support them even at all personally. I'm trying to be very, very careful about not doing that anymore. I don't want to be on stage with someone that I really think is not worthy of the field. Now, if that person's speaking at the same conference, I don't really think it's fair for someone to say, oh, well, he appeared at the same place so-and-so appeared at. I mean, there's a certain limited number of appearances that you're going to make, and if someone invites me to say what I want to say,
You have to consider it, of course. Doesn't that give you these skeptics ammunition to say, well, if you're willing to speak, in the same program as so and so and such, how can we take your work seriously?
Yeah, well, that's a specious argument. I mean, the fact is that this is the type of thing that illegitimate skeptics will do. That they will attack.
It's ad hominem.
That's not really attacking the data itself. It's not attacking the argument itself.
Okay, well that brings us to
go after what I say and go after my methods.
Us to a great question from Eric the Red. How would you characterize what we might call UFO literacy, using that as an example, among most UFO debunkers and skeptics that you've encountered? He wants to know, how would you characterize Michael Shermer's knowledge? He's particularly interested.
Well, I think in general it's actually fairly low.
Yeah, Robert Schaefer falling asleep at Congress.
I'll tell you a funny story about Robert Schaefer. So I was in Phoenix with him this year at the UFO Congress, and I had maybe a 10-minute chat with Robert Schaefer. And as we started talking, like all these people started surrounding us, and I wanted to know, like, really, what is Robert Schaefer's knowledge of this field? I have to be perfectly candid and just tell you, this man knew nothing.
I had to wake him up during one presentation. He was against the back wall snoring. And I told him, hey, man, you're snoring.
I felt bad for him as I'm talking to him, thinking, you really don't know anything about the declassified literature on this subject. You literally know nothing of value. I think I probably said this to him, but I was nice about it. I wasn't on camera. It didn't really matter. But I felt sorry for him, to be perfectly candid. I thought, this is the best you've got. You've got nothing. Now, Shermer, honestly, I've never had a one-on-one with Michael Shermer, but I've never been impressed by his knowledge about the UFO phenomenon. Never. Not even a little bit.
Well, he's very intelligent. Willfully ignorant.
Yeah, he's intelligent in his area, but when he starts talking about UFOs, it's very evident.
Well, I don't know how intelligent he is. He's shooting primitive radio waves out, or looking for radio waves, rather, that have been shot out. To me, that...
So maybe you're. I don't think he's a dummy, but I just don't think he's knowledgeable at all about this field. He's shockingly, shockingly ignorant. Who would be good? I mean, at least Phil Klass like knew some of the cases.
Well, Lance Moody, I think, who we've had a very contentious relationship here on the Paracast forum with Lance, and we've had Lance on the show. I think the work that he does, by and large, if he doesn't get this real negative passion going. The actual work that he does, the research that he does, and to a lesser degree, Anthony Bogalia, I think he puts too much spin on stuff. Lance is very good because he figures out where the facts are and then stands, you know, very stoically behind them.
Good.
Which I like. Well, here's one from Eric the Red. I love this question. Boy, I wish somebody would ask me this. Let's say you were gifted $100 million on the condition you would spend the money on bringing the UFO topic to a point of resolution or understanding as quickly as possible. What would you do with the money?
Wow, $100 million.
Yeah, first hire a business manager.
I would get that ivory back scratcher I've been hankering for, which would maybe cost, you know, $10,000. But after that, then I'm going to spend the rest of it. Seriously, $100 million. That's an interesting question.
You never know. Some rich, you know, industrialist, you know, might have this closet passion.
Well, I would do a couple of different things. So I would probably find the best, and these would not be UFO people, so the best experts. You'd have to take a multifaceted approach, I think. So you wouldn't want to just do one thing because that's a lot of money. So some of the people, I would find some of the best FOIA activists in the country. And I would pay them to look for UFO FOIA information, because I still don't think that's
so. In other words, you go out and buy an army of vacuum cleaners.
That would be one element. I would probably want to get researchers, activists, or not activists, but people who know the FOIA system who would be able to be effective possibly at filing FOIA requests, and maybe around the world.
Just hire Nick.
I might also try to bribe people in WikiLeaks or Anonymous, honestly, you know, to pull information out illegally out of let's get real. So if I have money to play with, I think that I believe at this point that there's UFO data that is locked up in the classified bowels that may never be released. And so if I had access to pay my own contingent in some of these hacktivist groups, I think I would look out, reach out, and I would do that. So that would be on that aspect of it. The other thing I think that would be useful would be to, hopefully as intelligently as possible, to organize a data collection system. You know, something like what you're doing now, Chris, but, you know, with good funding, good oversight, good collaboration.
We'll have a net collection. Pick out your top, you know, five or six hotspots.
Right,
North America.
Right. So I think that would be something. It still would leave probably a great deal of money. Maybe bribe a couple of
120,000 times how many setups you have. You know, as a general rule of thumb, 100,000.
I was saying bribery with a little bit of a smirk, so understand. But I have to think about that one. I don't know. I think government FOIA. Hacktivists.
Okay, we've got Richard Dolan with Gene and Chris. You're in
the podcast.
Independently leading the way for the nation. Compelling talk for every political persuasion. We are GCN.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It took hours before it returned, but I'd already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Talk to a sales rep at iWeb.com. Use the promo code TechNightOwl for a special discount.
Did you know that drinking pure, high-alkaline water is one of the most important factors in maintaining high energy and vibrant health? Most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 8 or higher. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops, available only at AlkaVision.com, combine a unique formula of only the most alkaline minerals. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops alkalize your water, ridding the body of harmful toxins, and helps you regain health and energy. Alkalizing your water by simply adding 10 drops of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops helps the body rid itself of acidic waste, increases oxygen content, and raises the pH of your body to healthy levels. And bacteria and viruses cannot survive in an alkaline high pH environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops for only $29.95 at AlkaVision.com. That's AlkaVision.com. Or call 269-409-1776. 269-409-1776. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health at AlkaVision.com today.
Hi, this is Steve Sanchez, and based on a recent study, it was found that 57 million Americans had legal issues over the last 12 months, but only 60% of those studied sought out the services of a lawyer. Why? In a nutshell, affordability. Well, my friends at LegalShield have created a solution that can help you not if, but when you need an attorney. For as little as $17 per month, LegalShield will provide you unlimited access to qualified attorneys at an accomplished law firm for advice and counsel on legal issues, no matter how serious or trivial. For over 40 years and with 1.4 million families across North America, LegalShield can help you, the loyal GCN listener. Representatives are standing by now to answer your questions, so call them now at 1-855-340-SAVE. That's 1-855-340-7283, or visit them at lsprotection.com. That's lsprotection.com.
Results will vary from case to case.
Hi, my name is DeRay. Suffering from migraines, having Botox injections in my head and neck to alleviate pain, costing $1,500 out of my pocket. I discovered Dr. Ortman and Gentle Touch Chiropractic Adjustment called NUCA. I'm migraine-free since my first adjustment. Thanks for giving me my life back, Dr. Ortman. I wish they prescribed you instead of Botox.
Thanks, DeRay. Putting the bones back in place is only half of the solution. We design a nutritional supplement program the body can handle, actually absorb, providing nutrients, targeting the problem area. Between NUCA and nutrition, we will have you on the road to a faster and more permanent recovery. Look us up on the web at drortman.com or call 952-303-9124. Let us help you feel better faster. Wellspring Spinal Care at 952-303-9124. Again, that's 952-303-9124. Or on the web at drortman.com.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
You know, I wish we didn't have a clock. Because we have to follow a specific schedule. It's computerized in the radio business with all the networks. And so we have to break at a specific time. And then sometimes a guest starts going, and things just get fascinating. Like, what would Richard Dolan do with $100 million with which to investigate UFOs? Well, you know there are people out there who are willing to fund political campaigns. They'll give some of the craziest candidates on the planet, or at least here in the U.S., $100 million.
Yeah, yes, sick. Yeah. I think something else that could be done with that money would be to find a way to jumpstart a kind of a broad, like to create the organization that MUFON needs to be. In other words, to create a kind of public based, I don't even know if this is possible, but I think it should be possible, like a public-based
qualified
UFO investigative.
Network.
Yeah, some kind of network. I mean,
qualified.
Right. So I think that might be a good way to go.
Yeah, a research center, get outfitted with a, some sort of analytical lab where you could analyze rudimentary physical evidence, but mostly forensic visual evidence, instrumented data analysis, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, and a research center. Gosh, you could just spend a few million dollars and have a world class, library of research materials.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think our history is actually an important part of this phenomenon. It's not simply getting new stuff. It's actually, you know, preserving all of the old data that was collected by researchers from in the 40s and 50s and 60s.
Right, and collate all the best cases into a database worldwide, you know.
Yeah, hire archivists, hire analysts to go through it.
Maybe train some people to go over and start dovetailing with India, with China, with Indonesia, more interconnectedness with South America and Latin-speaking countries. Africa is virtually untouched.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Interesting question.
Well, do you think maybe it makes sense to pitch this to the people who really have the money and are involved in politics, like the Koch brothers? They've had multiple billions of dollars, what, $50, $100 billion. Can't they spend $100 million to check this out?
Well, in theory, some of them have the cash. I don't have access to any of these people. So if I had the ability to get in front of them and charm them and sweet talk them, hey, maybe it could happen. I don't know the Koch brothers. I don't know George Soros. I don't know any of these people. So it would be rather difficult for me without an introduction. You know,
the Waltons. We could say goodnight, Mary Ellen.
Yeah, exactly.
Goodnight, John Boyd.
It's a nice fantasy to think about. Whether they would do it is that's a whole other issue. But
you know who has the money? Paul McCartney. Oh.
He doesn't have Walton money. He doesn't have Koch brothers money, or
he's got $1 billion.
Well, he got outbidded years ago by Michael Jackson over his own music, though, didn't he?
Yeah, who wouldn't even sell him back one song? You know, the only song he wanted back, and that was Yesterday, and Jackson wouldn't do it.
Yeah. Well, anyway, cool. I don't really know where else to go with this particular.
Well,
question.
Okay, so we'll move it along here. Again, back to the skeptical thing. You know, you've had to deal with them. I've had to deal with them. I've had to deal with, look in the mirror and deal with myself at times, which is, I think, healthy. To you, this again from Eric the Red. To you, what are the strongest skeptical arguments, and what are your replies to these things?
Well, what skeptical arguments are we talking
about?
Well,
just in general. I mean, how often do you run into a skeptic? What's the first thing or the most common thing that they dog you about, and how do you respond to it?
I would say one of the most common things that skeptics will offer is that what we consider to be UFOs are, when they're anything at all, are classified technology. And, you know, the one thing that I keep coming back to is when I look at this phenomenon historically, I look at the earliest documents that we have available to us from the end of the Cold War, from the end of World War II, early Cold War. And I just keep coming back to the fact that we have documented airspace violations of very sensitive places, many of them nuclear installations in the early nuclear technology era, that show again and again objects described as either round in form or disc-shaped violating the airspace with maneuvers that were supposed to be impossible, with attempted interceptions. And these are documented in some of these memos that were attempted and failed. That were taken seriously within the classified world. So I keep coming back to that, and I ask myself, how is it that black budget technology can explain that? And I just don't have a good answer.
Let me ask you a question here, because it follows from that. Do you think there's anything in early UFO history that represents a military test, a military trick? And we'll give you an example of that. James Carrion had this book out called The Rosetta Deception. I don't know if you've seen it or heard of it. Suggesting the ghost rockets were just put-up jobs to spook the Russians for some reason during World War II. And I suspect he's going to do something with Roswell to indicate it's also a put-up job.
Well, Joseph Farrell has approached that whole subject extensively.
That's right, he has. And, the interesting thing about Joseph, who I know fairly well, is that he is a personal believer in the extraterrestrial at least he does not discount the ET possibility of the UFO phenomenon. I think he actually believes in it. He also believes that there's a tremendous influence from German/Nazi technology into what we call UFOs. And I think he's probably right. I think both of these are part of it. In terms of the ghost rockets, yeah, I'm aware that James Carrion made this argument. I really have to become acquainted with the details of the whatever archival sources he's uncovered.
He did a good job with the research. Yeah. There's some pretty compelling stuff there.
Could be.
But not many people know about the ghost rocket waves around the Mediterranean.
Right. No, that's exactly right. And what we do know is that U.S. military intelligence was on top of this situation no matter what. I mean, we know that they shut down the Greek investigation in 1946. Paul Santorini, who famous Greek scientist, talked explicitly about this 20 years after the fact. He said, when we came to the conclusion that these were not missiles, these are not Russian, he said an external government came in, he implied the U.S., and shut the whole and caused us to shut the whole thing down, the Greek investigation. So the thing is this, though. When you're talking about a U.S. Technology program, our own rocket program in 1946 was...
It was the German rocket program.
Nothing. Yeah, exactly. But even getting that off the ground, I mean, there is no infrastructure that anyone really knew about that really, I think, could have been capable of doing this. He's connecting it to Penemunda, but I don't really think that's viable.
No.
And with the range, by the way, that would have been, I think, tripled, actually, in 1 year's time from what the leading... at least as far as the analysis that I remember reading, you know, with a vastly increased range, like almost overnight, over the V-2s. So,
well,
and then you've got cases of apparent landings and in some cases maneuvers that these things did. I don't think it works to call them rocket. And by the way, then there's the declassified Swedish report that was not declassified till 1985. I don't know if James deals with this, but this is a very important statement in my opinion, because what you had in the Swedes were looking into this in 1946, and in a very long-winded conclusion, they said, I wish I had it in front of me. I have it in one of my volumes. Basically, their conclusion was, this looks like this is not of our civilization. They did a very kind of roundabout way of saying it, but that was their conclusion in 1946. So, again, if this is classified U.S. technology, it was that good to make U.S.-Swedish allies, who the U.S. was conferring with at that time, by the way, believe that this was possibly interplanetary.
Well,
so I don't know. I'm not saying that there's no secret technology explanation to some of these early sightings, but no one's nailed it down, to be honest. I mean, hell, in 1997, the CIA made their famous statement that, you know, more than half of all UFO sightings after the mid-1950s going into the 60s were of the U-2 or the A-12 ox cart. And that's just totally specious and unfounded by any research at all. If James has got something else, then all right, good. I should read it.
Yeah, no, it's definitely worth it. I think it was giving it away online, if I'm not mistaken.
But yes, currently offers the book from a link at his website. I think he's working on a modified edition with more information. So it's good to look into all these possibilities. And
he dug up some good stuff.
Yes, he did. Let's do our break. He sure did. Please visit plus.thepowercast.com to check out our premium service. And after the Powercast, our new exclusive podcast, only available to Powercast Plus subscribers, plus.thepowercast.com. Richard Dolan is our guest this week with Gene and Chris. You're in the Powercast.
Independently leading the way for the nation. Compelling talk for every political persuasion. We are GCN.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
As if chlorine in our water weren't bad enough, now they're adding ammonia? It's true. Some municipalities are now adding ammonia plus chlorine to your water supply. It's a disinfectant called chloramine. But with a trusted Big Berkey water filter, you can keep chloramine out of your water. New NSF EPA certified lab tests show EPA Berkey water filters remove chloramines, pharmaceuticals, BPA, pesticides, bacteria and viruses, all forms of fluoride, and much more. Big Berkey water filters are the original and most trusted on the market. The gold standard in water purification. And our filters last for years at less than 2 cents per gallon. Big Berkey, the one that's powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water. Get your Big Berkey today. Call 1-877-99-BERKEY or click BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY. Big Berkey Water Filters, for the love of clean water.